It's the Silicon Valley After Show, and I hope you guys are excited. I know we are.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a quiet day here at the AfterBuzz TV studios, but I'm so glad to be back. I missed you guys last week.
Wait, you were gone?
I was virtual.
He was in the digital world.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you were inside the Matrix.
I was inside the Matrix.
While we talked to
He was watching too much Tron.
Too much. I wish I were watching too much Tron.
There's another Tron?
Oh, there are so many. There are so many Trons. Speaking of not Tron,
No, let's not let that slide. Let's just come up with another transition. Not speaking of not Tron. Phil's not here, though.
Technically speaking,
I like it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's do
We're in.
This is the Silicon Valley After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. You guys, my name is Jeff Graham. Thanks so much for being here today. I missed you last week, but I'm so glad to be back. If you guys want to find me online, you're able to. You can do it on Twitter at Jeffrey C. Graham. I have some amazing co-panelists who are also here in studio with me to talk about this show.
What's going on, guys? This is Nate Miller here. You can find me on all social media at DogLikeNate.
I'm Christian Blatt, and I don't like things that are cool or fun or taste good, and you can find me at ChristianDMZ.
Is it cold in here, guys?
I actually remember now that you say that. I was like, oh, I should message the guys and say that we should all wear scarves and things.
Yeah,
yeah, about that.
Completely forgot about it, though.
I was, as a California resident, that this resonated. This was a resonant thing with me.
Yeah.
That was pretty good what I just did there. The cold, people are often cold in California when it goes below like 70 degrees.
Well, it's an excuse to get out the fun scarves and mittens and possibly earmuffs.
Pedophile sweaters in the case of Donald Jared.
Yeah, Donald Jared had a very creepy sweater on. And it's funny because Jack Barker, I know I'm jumping to the end, but he basically says the way that non-Californians feel about, like, oh, there's just a little bit of frost on the ground. It's like, well, actually, the truck slipped on the ice.
The one time it's not.
Yeah.
It's blown out of proportion.
It was very funny, I thought.
Let's go ahead and start by talking about Hooli, because I feel like that occupied less of the episode, so we can start small and get big. Action Jack Barker is back.
Back for the attack.
What did you guys think about seeing Jack Barker once again?
It was cool. I like the scene. I like how it played out with us, you know, him getting his own issue that he has to kind of overcome. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we had, what's the security guard's name?
Hoover.
Yeah, that's of course, Hoover was there. And him, you know, idolizing, and he's just like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of that, actually, was how Hoover clearly, you know, we had talked about the episode where Gavin was shown out by Hoover.
Yeah.
And we talked about how much it probably pained Hoover, but he was all professional about it. But now you see it, it lingers.
It's still, he still has that personal connection.
Which
but
I loved,
The diorama, too, though, was great, too.
I think what I would have loved would just be, like, Denpak sneakily eyeing from behind the corner, seating with jealousy. That would have been a nice cut, but this was fun. The thing I liked about this, and I'm not sure if I was reading this in the same way that you guys read this, but when he's watching and idolizing Gavin's presentation at HooliCon, and he's like, this is the best thing I've ever seen, and it was pretty much just Gavin saying things.
Yeah.
I thought that was very, very funny. And I also loved, like, this was a very Mike Judgey thing, but Action Jack Barker's approach to corporate presentations is just only puns. Like, I thought this was very, very funny.
I thought that was great because he was just like, you know, all the puns that he had planned out. It was obviously bigger than, you know, the Mike Tyson and Vander Holyfield were going to box over who got to take the first box home. The Jack in the Box big reveal when he comes down from the ceiling. And clearly he had to rethink everything. And as the episode played out, kudos to Action Jack for taking action.
Yeah, this was fun, and I'm glad he's back. I'm kind of, this is, I guess, venturing into predictions, but I'm kind of foreseeing a Gavin-Jack showdown coming up.
I think that's something that we can realistically expect.
Yeah, we can get more.
And Hoover's going to be torn between Kramer versus Kramer.
Kramer versus Kramer.
He doesn't know what to do.
Sophie's choice. We just name every 80s Oscar-winning nominated movie. 70s? Late 70s, really.
Those are 70s, yeah. As somebody who understands the 70s, go to me. Anyway, go ahead, sir.
You're totally fine. So I feel like for the most part, we just got shades of Jack, just a little bit. This is an interesting thing. I want to go back to the California is cold thing, because this was kind of connected all the subplots in the episode. Nate, you are a resident Los Angelino.
I'm a native.
A native.
Yes.
Yes. Do you feel like See, my impression of California was that, like, San Francisco did get cold, and, like, it did snow there. So I was kind of surprised. Like, I feel like, to me, if this show were taking place in L.A., I would have expected everyone reacting this way. Like, this is the most weather-phobic city in the world. But I didn't know in San Francisco that was a thing.
I mean, I haven't spent that much time in San Francisco, but mm-hmm. I would imagine, especially because we're talking about the Valley, not, you know, just San Francisco. So there's, I guess, because it's maybe it's a little more removed from the ocean, it probably gets more heat. And, I'm you know, it's still, there's a lot of desert in there. I don't know. I think a lot of it, though, is kind of a misnomer because as a native, like, you know, I know it gets cold. That's right. How deserts work. It's hot as hell during the day, and then as soon as the sun goes down, it gets very cold very quickly. So to me, this is in my experience, most of the people who say these things are the people who are not from here, who come here, and they're like, oh my god, the weather is so nice, it's so hot and so sunny all the time, it's great, and then they get one little itsy bits of cold weather, and it's like the illusion is shattered, where they have to live in reality.
I think that it probably is owed a lot to the fact that you have a show set in Silicon Valley written by a bunch of Hollywood TV writers.
Yeah.
You're more making a statement about L.A. because, yeah, it can be freezing in California, I mean, up in San Francisco.
For sure.
And the Bay Area as a whole. So I thought it was very funny, though.
It was very funny.
The way they addressed
it. A lot of just subtle callbacks to the weather, which I, as a native of L.A., I just thought it to be very spot on and, yeah, equally funny. Before we talk about, most of this episode was occupied by Pied Piper and Kenan Feldspar, but before we talk about that, I know we're a bit out of order, but I want to know you guys' just general reactions to this episode. What did you guys think of episode 8 overall? I have some opinions, so I'm curious to hear what you guys think.
I liked how it came around. I liked it. I think it started off a little slow, but it's one of those episodes where in the end where everything kind of comes together. When I rewatched it again, seeing all the pieces individually, it was actually cool how the way they laid it out and the way they, you know, everything kind of made sense. It didn't feel forced or anything. I really liked how we got kind of like everybody covered in like the same story. Like they kind of fit in different pieces, some of them smaller than others, but we kind of got all of the main cast included in this, you know, buyout plotline.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah, like Nate said, I think that it definitely had to build towards the end of the show, at the end of the episode, and it didn't go where I thought it was. You know, I didn't think there was going to be like a real resolution by the end of the episode, and that Action Jack was going to tie in right away. I thought that was just building towards something that we'd see down the road. But yeah, I thought that it was, as the show so often does, it does tie everything together in a way that you weren't expecting, which usually on TV, it's a way you are expecting.
And I like seeing Guilfoyle and Dinesh like team up, and I like seeing Richard be like the leader of the company actually, and I like seeing Jared as like his right-hand man.
Yeah.
And then you get to see, you know, even down to Monica and her giving her advice, you really get to kind of see everybody kind of in their places contribute as to like what the, you can kind of see what the company would be like if you just kind of up the scale a little bit, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's actually convincing me more that I liked this episode. I liked it overall, but something about this season, I feel like I'm really, really liking this season, but I'm not sure it's my favorite season overall because I'm kind of feeling like the show doesn't know if it wants to be loose or doesn't know if it wants to be really tightly plotted. And I'm sometimes having trouble. It's that thing where, like, how many times and in what ways can they fail? And something about this episode, I felt like so much happened, but, like, I just felt like all the twists that kind of led us to the final resolution left me a little bit unsatisfied. And for some reason, I feel like all the exposition came a bit at the expense of jokes. I don't know if you guys felt that way at all, but I'd say for me, this episode was like a B.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely felt less slapsticky, less, you know, quotables and punchlines and things of that nature. But in my opinion, that coming, you know, that being the cost of us getting, in my opinion, is really good plot, I think is worth it. Because I agree a lot with what you have to say about the plot beforehand, but I think this season especially, part of the reason why a lot of the episodes have been so plot heavy is they're trying to make these like shakeups and stuff that happen actually matter and add up to something, as opposed to just being a way to keep hitting the reset button. At least that's how it seems.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that you got a lot less jokes per square foot, aka a lot less Angie Tribeca than you might have some other weeks. And basically, the idea was that there was just a bigger story to tell. And to your point, point, Jeff, what I was thinking when you said that how many times can they fail, the way that the show usually works is they either fail or they get screwed over by somebody.
True.
And both of those happened in this episode.
Yeah.
And they failed because they got screwed over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the interesting thing, of course, the moment when Richard sends that email right before he walks in, and, you know, obviously that we must assume that that'll come back at some point, but at the moment he's actually able to be like, oh, yeah, I'm a great leader. I mm-hmm. did everything for you guys. And of course there is that fun moment when they're all facing the back door expecting him
yeah.
to come in. That's so kind of a nice
that was
yeah.
a good callback.
Yeah.
Oh, he came in the front this time.
But when Nate said what he liked seeing about Guilfoyle and Dinesh working together, what I liked was I love the matching pajamas.
Yeah, that
I
was
thought
great.
That was pretty amazing.
And the logic of explaining
yeah.
it, of like, well, I'm not going to wear the same thing for 3 days, so yeah, we're wearing the same thing. It's totally fine. It's not weird.
It's rad, in fact.
Oh,
yeah.
man.
Yeah, him saying rad was
and
a great
then later
moment.
In the episode, too, when they're talking about Hawaii, when he makes the metaphor, he's like, Hawaii, it's nice. And I was like,
yeah.
like spit out. I was like,
you're like, what?
He just, like, no yeah. sarcasm.
I made that note when I watched it. I'm like,
it
wait.
It was weird.
Guilfoyle thinks something's nice.
Yeah.
Because even in VR, he said something about how, like, the no consequences world is yeah. darkly promising. Yeah.
Darkly.
And that's usually.
That's a very that, Guilfoyle.
Yeah, that's advice. A very. But saying that Hawaii is nice. Which just goes to show you that Hawaii is nice for everyone.
That's true.
Hawaii Board of Tourism would like to sponsor the show.
That's
please.
The takeaway from this episode. If Guilfoyle thinks Hawaii is nice, no one in the world
it's
does
true.
Not think Hawaii is nice. Yeah, I agree with you guys. It's just something about this episode felt a little heavy to me, I think. Or just like a little meandering, and like I felt a little exhausted by the end just trying to track every move, but I don't want to take that away from the show because it's a very elegantly plotted show, and I know the writers work so hard in the room to make every decision that these
yeah.
characters are making matter.
Well, and the one thing that I got, the only thing I could say I was like somewhat frustrated by was the Ehrlich thing with the fire, because
mm-hmm.
I was just, I don't know about you, but I was confused with how the whole thing went down. He went out and was upset, so he burned it down, but then he just sat there while it was burning, and the smash cut of him at the door.
I think that was just, we wanted to see Ehrlich hit rock bottom for a guy who we talked about last week who really needed that job,
yeah.
and he really needed somebody to throw him a lifeline. He got screwed out of it, so I feel like he's actually dead. Like, he's pretty much lost everything. I mean, he still has the house.
Yeah, well, I mean, seeing him start the episode with that desk, too,
yeah.
and he's got the scooter and all this
yeah.
stuff, he's all excited, and then
yeah.
by the end of the episode, he's got nothing.
Yeah, which I think, you know, to Jeff's point about the way that this episode kind of moved along, and it was very plot-heavy, you know, the little glimpse in the future we got from Suzanne Cryer last week is that I think next week is supposed to be something really big and great.
I'm sensing that,
yeah.
especially with the way everything kind of tied together at the end of the episode. Speaking of Ehrlich, that it's very interesting because the way Ehrlich's story is moving this season makes his departure feel kind of like unduly timed. Because it feels like it's a very Ehrlich-heavy season, and it's kind of weird we're seeing him hit rock bottom, knowing we might not see him next season. And with HBO, everything's shot and edited, so it'll be really interesting to see.
Right, but it's funny that you say that, because I was wondering, especially in the scene that Nate's talking about, where he's just sitting there, I'm like, I wonder if they knew, but it just they didn't announce. You know, they're
yeah.
like, all right, we're going to try and, you know, send him out in a big way, which hopefully is satisfying for people who like the character, you know, that he reaches this, and then, you know, he just tells everybody to fuck off.
I think we're going to get some type of resolution by the end of the season.
Yeah.
I really don't think that they're going to create this kind of like pitfall for him to like overcome and then end the season and then we never hear from him again.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm sure that this is a setup for him redeeming himself in some way in the finale in some way that's like, great, Ehrlich, all right, see ya, you know, thanks for.
Yeah, he's probably going to bang someone's wife. So we'll see how he can pull that off.
It is another big event.
Yes, that's true. And for every conference, Ehrlich bangs a wife. I think that's like a hard and fast rule in their writer's room. Well, the huge major character, of course, that really tied the whole episode together was Haley Joel Osment's portrayal of Keenan Feldspar. I really enjoyed this, actually.
Yes.
I thought this was another fresh take on like the Silicon Valley type. I was very amused by his like manipulativeness, because I don't think we've seen such an amiable manipulator on the show yet. Like, normally those who manipulate are like Gavin Belsons, or they're douchebags, or they're bros. And he kind of just like used kind charm to like win
yeah,
people
we're
over.
We're doing this. We're going to do this. This is going to happen. It's going to happen. Yeah. So, and that like, oh yeah, I get really excited. This guy's so friendly about it. Yeah. I think you're right. And that's definitely a much more real world manipulator that you'll actually run into, is the person It's just like, come on, this is going to be awesome. Let's do this.
Yeah, I found that to be very funny. I don't know what you thought, Nate, but...
Yeah, I mean, I thought... I agree with you. It's nice to see a kind of a different perspective, and it was really cool that there's quite a few lines and puns that they threw in comparing him and Richard, whereas, like, he's, like, has the Midas touch, you know? every he wins at everything, and he even says, like... when he gets the deal, he's like, man, I'm not used to, I wanted this.
I have the quote.
You always get what I want.
He said, I had a feeling of mad, but then I had lunch, and after that, I was a little tired, but mostly I felt pretty okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that too.
And the pairing of him and Ehrlich is, like, with their train of thought is just so perfect too.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was cool, and I'm really curious about that demo, because I have my own ideas of what it is, but...
Yeah, can we talk about the demo? So, from what we understand, the demo is you walk up a hill and you get to a bar.
A tavern,
thank you.
And you can look at the pretty bartender as long as you want.
Wherever
you want.
Barmaid, if we want to be.
True.
This was just such a funny, like, I felt like encapsulation of, like, immature dude porn, like... I don't know. This was, for all the things that the VR could have explored, I thought this was hilarious.
And of course, who sees through it but Bream Hall,
right,
Lori and Monica, because they're like, oh, cool, great tech. Buy it, look at it, and they're like, what did we just get ourselves into?
I felt like they almost could have played that a bit more heavily of, like, all the dudes like this demo because they're just peeping at a hot girl.
I think it's even better that they don't because it's so subtle. I kind of caught on. I didn't even really get all the references and reactions until I watched it the second time.
Yeah.
Because then when you realize what they're talking about, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
It's darkly
promising. Although I will say it did bring up something where I agree with Richard. VR is kind of a fad. I was actually just talking to somebody about it, and it's like, it's going to replace television. I'm like, no, it'll replace video games.
Yeah.
So, because television is passive. Like, I don't want to sit there and have to participate.
For sure.
Entertain me. I don't want to have to, hello, barmaid.
Yeah.
May I have a drink? Oh, my God, she poured it from, no, just pour a drink.
It's already too much work.
I don't know if it's going to happen in that way, but I do think that we are going to see more immersion within television and film.
Let us know in the comments, guys. Are we going to see more VR? Let us know. Tweet at us. So I want to try to track the whole journey of Pied Piper through this episode and just see if I missed anything. So we find out that Ehrlich is Keenan Feldspar's key man in this deal, which means that he's able to negotiate with Bream Hall. So then he offers to acquire Pied Piper, but when Richard counters, he leaves Raviga, subsequently breaking Ehrlich's commitment to Bream Hall, which allows him to fund Richard's counteroffer. But then Hooli steps in, deciding to acquire Keenan's VR, which means Hooli's now out of the picture, as is Ehrlich with Bream Hall. Is that right?
Well, Hooli's not out of the picture.
Sorry.
Pied Piper's out of the picture. Pretty much that's the sort of the bouncing ball that was Keenan Feldspar throughout the course of the episode.
Okay.
And again, that's not quite how I thought it would play out, at least not in this half hour. So I was kind of impressed. I was impressed with Keenan Feldspar being able to manipulate everybody in his very bro-like fashion.
Yeah, my favorite touch here was the email that Richard actually sends. Did you guys get a chance to read it?
Yeah, I paused it and read it.
I only read the first line. What essentially did it say?
So I wrote it down. We have, Keenan, thank you for your offer, but I have to turn it down. You said you knew I was going to take this deal, and that I knew I was going to take this deal. In fact, you said it many, many times, over and over, but I decided not to take this deal.
Which is so Richard.
Yeah. Which is such a Richard way.
Like, there's a completely simpler way to say that, but not for Richard.
So I feel like for the most part, we've kind of tracked Keenan's presence in this episode. I think we probably will get more of him, right? Because we're going to
HooliCon. I feel like he's going to be at HooliCon.
Yeah. Which I'm excited about. I've really enjoyed... This has probably been, potentially in the whole series, my favorite, like, guest star. I like Haley Joel Osment, and I think he's being used very well here.
Yeah. This is a great part for present-day Haley Joel Osment, where we've seen him go.
Sure. And it can be tough with a punch to find work in Hollywood, so I'm excited that they've managed to swing it.
And those man titties atop that punch.
The man tits atop the punch. So...
Poetry.
Let's talk about some of the just interplay of the actual Pied Piper guys during all these acquisitions. Again, we mentioned it, but the Guilfoyle Dinesh dynamic was pretty fun in this episode. I think unexpected and something we really haven't seen yet. The matching PJs were an excellent touch, as we mentioned.
Which I think we talked about either last week. I think, Nate, maybe even you mentioned this. You like when they're a united front against somebody else. And when they have a common goal, you can see what these guys can accomplish. They basically made his VR much better over the course of a weekend.
They did.
Whereas if each of them were working on something separately, it probably would have taken much, much longer. So it is nice to see how well they can work together.
Definitely. Of course, Jared always has his moment.
He always has his Jared.
And I quite enjoyed the nautical analogy conversation that he had with Richard. The eye captain was great for me. Other than that, though, I'm trying to think of any specifics about this episode that I'm missing. I feel like a lot happened, but there's almost not a ton to cover because it was so heavy on plot.
Well, I think the other really big point that we're missing over is his conversation with Monica.
Yeah,
because
true.
One, not only does he get some great advice and he finally realizes what's going on with the whole situation, but two, we also get, like, which is something that I missed until the second watching, was she offers to fund them.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I'm a partner. I can do, no problem. Here you go. Take the money. You just got to show me an actual product.
On the contingency.
Right. So that actually works. Yeah.
That was a big setup for what we saw at the end of the episode and them, you know, pushing
for
HooliCon. To get the rest of their phones that they need so they can actually launch. And then they're funded. So they're so, even though they're in this boat, you know, stranded and they're, you know, got the cloud company coming after them, like, it's, they can see it. It's so close. And so with that plan that comes together at the end, especially with Monica backing them, it could be really good. And it's really cool to see her, to see her reach that point now of being able to do that versus at the beginning of the show where she believed in him and she had to fight to try to get down the money and stuff. It's just a really cool character progression.
And I did like the way that, you know, in a very half-hour comedy fashion at the end of the episode, setting up another one, it's like, I need to do this. I need to do that. Dinesh, how much are tickets to HooliCon? He's just like, why would I have that information? Why would he have that information? So I thought that was perfect. There was just a perfect moment for the show to go out on that.
It was nice.
When he just, like, as soon as he asked him that question, I knew it was going to be some smart ass response. It was so perfect.
Yeah, and it's a nice way to me. Those are the jokes that I could have used a little more of. Like, to me, that was a very clear foreshadow, plot oriented writing, but that touch is what I loved. And I hope in the last two episodes of seasons are always strong on this show. So I have high expectations, but they are all always busy with a lot of happenings. So I hope we balance that plot with those light touches that I think make the show so special.
I think what it was for this episode is we got a lot of Ehrlich, but it didn't feel like a lot of the Ehrlich that we normally get.
It's
kind of
angsty.
Well, it was also just very, just in terms of his performance, like when we have TJ, it seems like a lot of the stuff we get, I'm just assuming it's just, like, off the top, him saying crazy shit.
Right.
And, you know, they pick something that works and they go with it. Whereas with this episode, it felt like everything that he said, probably just because of its relevance to the plot, there wasn't a lot of, like, random riffs and silly shit here and there.
Yeah.
So I think that is where a lot of the energy that you feel like is missing is coming from.
That's a good point. Anything you think that we're missing, Christian, before we move into...
No. I was scrolling through my detailed notes, and I think we pretty much hit everything. And it's a lot of setup for next week, I think.
Speaking of next week, how about we get into some predictions?
And now...
Let's start with you, Christian C. Blatt. Is that your middle name?
My middle initial's G, but thank you. I'll certainly take the C. I liked in the coming attractions that we had a little great Jared moment about playing Uncle Jerry's game, and just everything he says about his early life, it just hurts so much, but in a way that you have to laugh at it. And I think that obviously something very big is going to go on at HooliCon, and it will not be fully realized in next week's episode. In fact, they'll probably look like they somehow screwed the whole thing up by the end of episode 9, and then episode 10, we'll finally see what was supposed to happen, including, my prediction, the return of Gavin Belson in episode 10.
Agreed. Nate?
I agree on basically all of that, especially the Gavin Belson thing. And I'm crossing my fingers, probably not this episode, but the next episode, that we can get another moment, like Suzanne said, like the season 1 finale that we got from the TechCrunch event. So I'm hoping the convention center environment gives us lots of comedic gold to go from.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of the convention center environment, this is another motif in the show, is big conventions. But the thing that I think makes them fun is the quirks of each one. So I hope we get a lot of Hooli-specific weirdness to justify giving us another convention.
It's a great opportunity, too, for callbacks to past seasons.
For sure.
Because it is HooliCon, so there'll probably be people that we're not expecting to see and products we've forgotten about.
This is the first HooliCon with Jock Barker, too. Yeah. So mm-hmm. that's also
a lot of boxes. There will be boxes everywhere. Yeah.
I also have a feeling that Bream Hall is going to end up funding this phone internet, because I just think that's what's going to happen.
I think so too.
That's why I said it.
That's what's going to lead us into the next phase of Silicon Valley.
Agreed.
Where they're not in Ehrlich's house,
yeah,
and they're like actually a company, and then they have to deal with those shenanigans.
What do you guys
just to say? I would love to see Guilfoyle and Dinesh in like an Office Space type environment.
Yes,
or something.
That'd be great.
That would be
welcome
great.
To Infotech. How many more seasons of Runway do you guys think we have?
I think that next season would be season 5, and that's probably a good round number to go out.
Yeah,
but with TJ Miller leaving before that, you know, he's sort of the biggest breakout star from the show. Not, you know, everybody works. But I think that we probably could get 2 more good seasons. Mm-hmm. But if we get 1 more great season, that's the way to do it.
For sure. Yeah. Well, in the meantime, guys, we, of course, have this season, which you guys can tune along with us on Mondays at 4 p.m. If you're listening, we'd love for you to rate and subscribe to the podcast. You probably are subscribed to the podcast because you're listening to it, but we'd love for you to go on iTunes and rate it. We have other after shows. We pretty much cover everything on TV. In the meantime, guys, my name is Jeff Graham. If you want to find me online, you can do so at Jeffrey C. Graham. I have a show that airs on Fridays called The Unproduced Table Read, and we're reading a very edgy, dark comedy this Friday that I think you'd like if you're a fan of this show. So that's 10 a.m. Pacific on our sister network, The Popcorn Talk. Show is called The Unproduced Table Read. Nate, take it away.
Guys, you can find me on social media at Dog Like Nate. Again, my name is Nate Miller, and I also host the Better Call Saul After Show, which airs tonight.
I'm Christian Blatt. You can find me at ChristianDMZ, and I'll be here on AfterBuzz TV tomorrow night at 7 Pacific for The Trump Report.
And guys, that's it for this week. We'll see you next week, and thanks for tuning in. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.